This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahman and welcome to Night School, the show that explores key themes in history, the social sciences and the humanities. Together with Sharat Kutin, we critically unpack theories, frameworks and social phenomena, the better to understand how society works. Each week, we discuss a classic text, theme, or an idea that we hope to shed light on the world around you. Sharat, unfortunately, isn't well this week, so he will not be joining us. But we do have Jessica Wong to talk to us about forgiveness. Now, Jessica is currently doing her master's in development studies at University of Malaya. But you've taken a few turns before you got there. You were doing a lot of aid and relief work with Mercy Malaysia and IPPF. Currently, you're also in the private sector. Are all these things connected with the theme of forgiveness? Help us understand where you're coming from, and that way we can get to know a bit about you.
I guess like being alive would make you think about forgiveness at some point in your life, right? Because mm-hmm. like to be alive is to hurt and to be hurt, like at different points of time mm-hmm. by different people, like two different people, right? Mm-hmm. So I think being in the NGO sector and like working in unstable environments kind of highlights that mm-hmm. in a more vivid way. Mm-hmm. But the theme of forgiveness intersects in all aspects of life, I think.
In a way, there's no escaping this question, right? Because at mm-hmm. some point, we have to face the need to either forgive others or forgive ourselves. This is something I don't think anybody masters, right? Because we don't know the kind of challenges we're going to confront. Sometimes it takes time to arrive to that point of forgiveness. But the interesting thing I think that you bring into this discussion is the fact that you've actually served in conflict areas, right? So, while with Mercy. Tell us a bit about that and some of the things that you observed.
I suppose like being in conflict areas or being in areas that have been hit, by natural disasters, you know, whether it's typhoons or floods or whatever, like you tend to see a lot of human resilience in action. So people who have been hit by natural disasters, who have lost family in the war, people who have been hurt in the war or, you know, lost a limb in war, they tend to have gone through more suffering. Mm-hmm. So with that suffering, I think it pushes you to develop like different ways of adjusting, like different ways of coping. Mm-hmm. And it can actually push them to be more resilient. Like they can show a lot more resilience than they thought they would ever show, you know, or they thought they would ever even think that they had in them.
Mm-hmm. Like, right, so, and this is right after
Sri Lanka, after the war ended, yeah. And we were basically working with newly resettled, like people who, IDPs that were going back and resettling.
IDPs being?
Internally displaced people mm-hmm. who were basically down south. I think they moved down south during the more violent bits of the war, and then they moved back up after the war ended and tried to rebuild their lives, mm-hmm. right? So I saw a lot of people who, for example, had lost. Okay, there was this woman actually in one of the mobile clinics that I went to, in the northern province, coastal area, and she was talking to me actually, and she was like, she told me she lost half her family in a war, mm-hmm. and the other half from the tsunami, mm-hmm. right? So I was like, oh, how, you know, I was wondering to myself, like, how do you even deal with that?
Yeah, how do you wake up the next morning?
Yeah, how do you not feel bitter? How do you not feel self-pity, right? Mm-hmm. Because when she was talking, I didn't get a sense of that, you know. Mm-hmm. I got the sense that she was sad that her family had gone, like she missed them. She was lonely because she was alone, you mm-hmm. know. But she also had that resilience. She showed that resilience, like that openness to talk to me. You mm-hmm. know? That, I think that's a sign of courage and forgiveness as mm-hmm. well. Like forgiving the fact that life had dealt her a blow, mm-hmm. but life is still there.
Yeah.
And she can still revel in it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and we tend to think of forgiveness in terms of other people when a lot of the times what we are trying to do is forgive the circumstances as well.
Yeah, right? You know, forgive the shame that you feel that you're so vulnerable, like that you're in that position of vulnerability. So I guess people who have had that choice taken away from them, people who have had their lives stripped from them, in terms of like material possessions, in terms of their family members and their links to society, like they feel a lot of shame, I think. Mm-hmm. That shame that they couldn't stop that from happening, like shame that they feel so much pain. Mm-hmm. So I guess that forgiveness also goes both ways. I think it's more internal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the survivor's guilt. Mm-hmm. But there's also this perennial question and that everybody's tempted by, and that's the question of why me? Right? Mm-mm. Why did it have to happen to me? And in a lot of ways, what you're seeking is a sort of justice in the way that things turn out for you in your life, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So why was I born overweight? Why was I born over a certain height? Why am I of, you know, you want that sort of correcting that happens. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that can relieve you of, you know, being burdened by the things you can't change is to forgive. Mm-hmm. Forgive circumstances in a lot of ways. Also forgive yourself for maybe not living up to certain desires you have. But I feel that we're using this word a bit loosely now. So why don't we start with a definition? And one of the things that that you're going to share with us today are some of the insights from a particular book that moved you with regards to this topic.
All right. So the book is called Forgiveness and Other Acts of Love by Stephanie Dowrick. She's trained as a psychoanalyst. She's also an interfaith minister for interreligious understanding in a church, in a non-denominational church in Australia, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So it's called the Sydney's Pitt Street Uniting Church. Mm-hmm. So she comes from that psychoanalytic background, but also merges spirituality into it because she thinks it's like very important in how we understand ourselves and how we relate to community, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, to community, to the environment, to the world generally, and like how it's all interrelated. Like it's really important to have that sense, not necessarily through religion, but that sense of wholeness or that sense of connectedness that she thinks draws us to live more fully. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How does she help us understand what forgiveness is to begin with?
So she defines forgiveness over the course of a chapter in her book, but she doesn't do it in a very conventional way. She's actually quite creative and original. It's not prescriptive in any way. She writes, forgiveness as an act of love is felt, not achieved. It can be given, but not always received. It cannot be bestowed as either a triumph over another person or as a means to secure their humiliation or acquiescence. So for her, it's not a thing that you give to someone in return for certain behavior. It's not something that you lose. It's not forgetting or denial of the actions that caused your wounding. It's about like really facing the pain and suffering that you feel and going through this process of forgiveness, yeah.
Yeah. So what I gather is that there's an element of letting go in this process, right? In a sense that sometimes what we are tempted to do upon forgiving someone is hoping for them to change, right? Or hoping for something in return, right? Or hoping to feel a certain elevation, right? Or transformation from the state of things. But she seems to understand forgiveness as not entailing those things.
Yeah, she doesn't see it as that. I think to her, it's not really a bargain made. It's not really something that you do because you make a conscious choice to do it. Because you can't control how you feel. Mm-hmm. You know, even though you say, okay, I really want to forgive this person, I forgive you, it doesn't mean that you actually feel it, you know. It's like a transformation within yourself that results in forgiveness. It's a feeling. You know, it's not something intellectual. It's not, it doesn't come from the ego. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. So if forgiveness isn't a thing, right? So it's not a moment. Then how do we know we've attained it? I get the insight there because sometimes we want forgiveness to be an event. We want to be able to say it to that person, right? I forgive you. or you say, I apologize when you seek forgiveness, and we hope for it to register at that moment. But I think if we've paid attention to just how we've lived through a lot of these instances, they either come way after the fact, right? The forgiveness already happened, and time passes before we can actually say it, right? Or we say it sometimes prematurely just to get the whole thing out of the way, right? Mm. So, I mean, I've heard in many cases people saying, you know what, I didn't realize it, but I think I've forgiven that person, you know, because enough time has passed.
Right.
Or sometimes you force that forgiveness in hope for you to move on when you actually haven't, because the bitterness is still there,
right,
you know?
Right.
So, so clearly, I think just from common sense, there's no thing to forgiving, right? Mm. So how do we know that we've actually gotten there?
Yeah, so this is the really interesting thing about what she says, right?
Mm-hmm.
She says that it's a very subtle process. It's difficult to pin down because it's different for everyone. So, for example, a lot of people have said, like you mentioned, that they go through this period of introspection, they go through their lives of sometimes forgetting like what was being done to them, you know, that incident that required forgiveness. And then they just realize, like, oh, I've forgiven, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that realization comes maybe from years of, like, this gradual lightening of their being.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have let go over a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't realize it until someone reminded them of that situation or mm-hmm. something, yeah. So she says that it can come quickly, but it can also be, like, a struggle of a lifetime, over a lifetime,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Like you said, the way you put it, the gradual offloading mm-hmm. of the burden is a sign of, I guess, this inner force that we somehow have. I don't want to use kind of spiritual terms here, but there's something else at work there, right? That is not rational,
mm-hmm.
That reveals a certain capacity to heal that we might not always be conscious of. And this happens as we go through life, as we acquire new experiences, we acquire new memories, we acquire new fun moments, happy moments, light moments, and gradually this sort of buries or somehow dilutes the kind of pain that we're trying to overcome, right? So that's what I gather from, how would you say, the not effortlessness. I think there's always some sort of effort being in there, but this letting go,
mm.
right? This not wanting to hold on to particular pain in order to constantly hope that it will heal. That when you let go, you surrender that wound to the confidence that life is bigger than that moment. But I know that just opened up a whole other set of questions, and we can return to that soon for the second part of the show, where we discuss more about forgiveness, as is suggested by Stephanie Dowrick in this book called Forgiveness and Other Acts of Love. Joining us this week is Jessica Wong, a master's student of development at University of Malaya, and I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahmat, and you're listening to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to me, Ahmad Fuad Rahmat, joined this week by Jessica Wong. She's a postgraduate student at the Development Studies Department in University of Malaya. We're talking today about forgiveness. And in the first part of the show, we tried to conceptualize the connection between forgiveness and letting go, and how that runs counter to how we think of forgiveness in terms of a bargain, in terms of an exchange or a transaction where we forgive something and we either expect a new feeling or a transformation in us or the other person. Stephanie Dowrick does not want us to be too attached to the expectation of transformation that comes with forgiveness. She wants us to think about it in terms of letting go. For the second part of the show, we're going to unpack more of the implications behind that insight. And one of the things that I find interesting about this topic, which we touched on in the first part of the episode, is that forgiveness cannot come from the ego. And what that means is simply is that forgiveness cannot come from the need to control
mm.
or the need to think that we can be in the driving seat of not just how we feel, but the outcomes we want, right? And one of the phrases that you shared before is that, this is citing the book, is that forgiveness deeply offends the rational mind, right? So in what way is forgiveness separate from the way we rationalize things?
If we kind of link the rational mind to the ego, right? the ego is kept alive by pride and honor. And when the ego is wronged, you cannot forgive because you should. It's just like how, you know, it prevents you from doing that, you know. There's like a barrier to that. In terms of forgiveness, like, it offends the rational mind because, well, it cannot be separated from suffering. So there is hurt. Without this hurt, you cannot even think of forgiveness, right? So the need for forgiveness begins with an act of betrayal, an act of cruelty or loss, for example. So it's not a particularly nice thing to explore. Like, you know, it's not something that you really want to think about, you know, all the loss, betrayals and pain in your life. And it, you know, your mind kind of rebels against it. It just wants to protect you. It doesn't want you to accede to it. It doesn't want you to look at it too much, you know. So in that sense, it is a struggle. Forgiveness is a struggle against the rational mind and the ego. Yeah.
So forgiveness requires a certain confronting of a painful memory or a painful event.
Yes.
But the rational mind is self-preserving, right?
Yes.
The rational mind wants to protect us. So there is always that contradiction. Mm-hmm. And it seems that in wanting to forgive, we have to check the kind of cost-benefit logic that comes with being very rational.
Yes.
Because there is this tendency to want to protect us from further hurt. And in this struggle, right, typically she highlights a key difference between two things, between on one hand forgiving and condoning. Mm-hmm. How do we understand that?
Sometimes it's easy to conflate forgiving with condoning the actions of hurt that has caused hurt, you know, the actions that had led to the pain that you felt in one point of time, right? So for some people, forgiveness is impossible because they feel like it would be accepting. It would be you saying that this is morally okay, you know, for that person to have done that. But she separates it. She says forgiveness is not really about justifying the actions that cause your pain. It's more of a movement to release the pain from your heart. You know, it's like a letting go of that, of the feeling of hatred, the feeling
of being
of
beholden.
Self-pity. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Hatred, being beholden, self-pity. It could also be that the bitterness that you feel that you were hurt. That idea that you mentioned before.
Is it like indignation, right?
Yeah, indignation, yeah. And also like this idea, like, why me? You know? Mm-hmm. Why did this happen to me? There's like a lack of acceptance when it comes to the response to pain, you know, in the beginning. So forgiveness kind of clears that, yeah.
So forgiveness in letting go, she has in mind the releasing of the holding on to pain, right? That we all seduced by, right? And we're seduced by it because we have this natural tendency to want to protect ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. So, and the evolutionary mechanism in a lot of ways work this way in that we feel guilt and we feel fear largely as a way for our bodies to remind us to avoid certain situations, to avoid certain things, right? So we replay certain memories. Of course, it's traumatizing. Of course, it's hurtful, right? Especially if it's coming from like a family member or some feud or something like that. These things are so close to us. And our bodies sort of react to these things largely as a way to remind us when the threat is there. But the interesting insight from what you're telling me is that forgiveness is a way out of that tendency, right?
Yeah. So it's about, yourself more than the other person. I found it interesting because it's not something that you give, right? It's not something that you absolve. It's not an action that you absolve that was made by a particular person, but more like how you feel about what happened to you.
Where does courage come into all this? Because I assume, based on the way that you've described this approach of facing pain, of letting go, of, in a lot of ways, not letting your rational mind be the driver of the process, I imagine it requires quite a bit of gumption.
courage is one of the virtues she talks about in her book, right? And there's this really interesting quote that I really liked from the book. And she says, courage is what allows you to learn that when life has apparently betrayed you, life itself is still present. Even when life goes wrong, even when things don't go to plan, even when you feel betrayed by life, it is still there and it's still, and it's in you and you are living it. You know, so it's that recognition. And that is courage. Courage is not one act of bravery that happens. Like, courage is different from that. It's like this will to go on, this will to open yourself continually to new experiences, to people, even in the face of pain. So in terms of like courage, like how it links to forgiveness, I feel that it takes courage to forgive. Because in order for you to feel open again, in order to let go so that you can have the joy of new experiences, you need to have the courage to forgive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I want to play devil's advocate here because there is a darker side to us that feels maybe spirited by grudges. Revenge is a very powerful motivator. It gets us to think of ways to get even. We think of devious ways to transform ourselves or to transform certain circumstances, situations in order to get back to the people who hurt us. And days and months down the line, you realize that a lot of things have happened around this desire to get even, to get revenge, to not let go, right? Because when you hold to this pain, you're galvanized. Like Batman, for example, hasn't been able to forgive himself for like decades and decades, right? But in the process of not being able to forgive himself, the guilt of, you know, being helpless, surviving his parents' murder, he builds a bat cave and, you know, becomes a vigilante and saves Gotham, right? I mean, it's all about him not being able to let go, but that's become something that really transformed him. So I know that Batman's a bit of a ridiculous example here, but I think we can think of more mundane day-to-day sort of instances of the same thing where you feel hurt, right? And in wanting to get even, you do all sorts of things to get there. And this is a certain productivity, a certain sort of spring to your step that you would not have otherwise if you were just complacent and if you just let go of all the hurt that passes, right? So I just want to play devil's advocate there and say, yeah, you know, letting go is very interesting and stuff like that. But there is this energizing aspect to being indignant, right? To wanting justice in a crude eye for an eye sort of way.
So this is an interesting thing because I was also thinking that when I was reading this book, like, wow, it's all so nice. You know, it's about forgiveness and it's all well and good. But when you're actually being hurt, obviously, you know, it's there's more energy in feeling rage or fear, you know, that I think there is place for that. I think there is place for rage, for pain, for vengeance. There is rage for like for fear, even self-pity, because it removes you from that situation of pain. You know, you need it. It's a defense mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
Without it, you wouldn't remove yourself from harm.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely, it's really, really useful in certain circumstances. And but in terms of a long-term feel, in terms of feeling that in the longer term, I think it would be problematic. Because even if you were interested in justice, to feel the full force of rage and pain and fear would not make you very effective and would also destroy you, like, eventually, over mm-hmm. time. It would consume you. So in you using that to power the things that you do, the actions that you do to repair what is wrong, it might consume you in the future, you know,
mm-hmm.
because it's unstable, it's painful. Mm-hmm. You're feeling that inflicts more pain on you too.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess she's not trying to say that you shouldn't try to change things yet. You shouldn't try to seek justice. And that there is a place and time for the defense mechanisms that we feel. Like, let's say someone runs over my dog, I'm angry, you know, or I'm in an abusive situation with a partner or something, and, you know, I feel fear, I feel pain, I need to get out, it spurs me to get out, okay, that's good, but what happens after, you know? Like, what do you do? How do you work through these feelings? What happens when it's not useful anymore? when you're out of that situation, when the pain has passed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or the scenario has passed.
Or the scenario has passed, yeah. So it's like, when is it useful to feel these feelings of rage, of self-pity, of vengeance, and when is it not?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when is forgiveness something that would help you in the longer term?
It stems from that basic insight that we're always more than our worst moment, right?
Yeah,
and sometimes it's very crippling to be beholden by that. I think there's a tendency too, when we talk about forgiveness and these virtues, to depoliticize them, right? And we make them very domestic concerns, or concerns of a very private kind and of isolated emotional experience, when in a lot of the issues we face today, you know, from conflict to climate change, requires a certain coming to terms with forgiveness, right? So what are the broader political insights that we can think about when we think about forgiveness?
Well, I think it's possible to be hurt, to be injured by a person, a community, or even a country,
mm-hmm.
you know? Especially when it comes to war, like, it's not one particular person hurting you. Usually it's like a country, mm-hmm. or your government even, or a certain section of mobilized people, right? So I don't really think forgiveness is something that is just personal between two people or between your family and you. I think it also has wider political connotations. In South Africa, after abolishing apartheid, they set up a body called the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And it allowed victims of terrible human rights violations to share their experiences, and also allowed the perpetrators of these violations to come forward and tell their story, and also to ask for forgiveness and amnesty, you know? I think it was like one of the rare cases. It was one of the first, I believe.
It was the first, yeah.
Yeah, it was the first. And, you know, that in contrast to the Nuremberg trials, you know, where they punished...
Yeah, war criminals were hung
in
public.
Yeah. So, you know, instead of punitive justice, this idea of forgiveness was incorporated into this idea of restorative justice, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And while some people argued that it wasn't good enough, or, you know, there were problems with the process, I think the majority of studies had shown that it was generally a success,
mm-hmm.
you know. And the process of forgiveness fosters dialogue. So instead of being punitive, instead of punishing, they fostered dialogue between the perpetrator and the victim. And that helped them get over the shame they felt, the pain they felt, the fear, the agony, you know,
mm-hmm.
of what happened to them. And it resulted in the highest rates of victim satisfaction and offender accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's often this platitude that you hear in debates about the death penalty,
mm.
right? And typically those who are for it will say something like this: the death of this person or whatever will bring peace to the victim's families.
Right. Yeah.
You know, which I find to be very dangerous given the high price they've put on peace for that family. But who am I to say? I've never really been in their shoes. But instinctively, I always felt unsettled by that association, you know, between punishment, in this case, not just imprisonment, but death, the peace that the family needs, which implies to me that sometimes punishment will not bring that sort of closure or clarity. Or if you associate punishment with clarity, then I think there's a certain problem or fracture in your worldview of what it means to be whole or what it means to function, right?
Yeah, because I think for her as well, forgiveness is this comes with this sense that you are linked to that person that did that to you. He's kind of like you, or he or she is kind of like you, you know. They're not any different. Like, they may do things that hurt, but essentially they're human like you, making mistakes, making choices, trying to find their way in a world that is quite fraught with danger, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to accept that person, you need to accept yourself. She frames forgiveness as an acceptance of yourself, of what you find disgusting in yourself,
mm-hmm.
because that's what you fear in that other person, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Hannah Arendt coined the banality of evil largely in observing just how relatable a lot of the choices of the Nazi bureaucrats were, right? Yeah. They were just careerists trying to make it in the system, and they did the things they did in the context that they were faced with. And you can draw analogues of that attitude with a lot of the other things that we can observe happening in sort of the rat race we have to submit ourselves to. It's not a popular observation, but she offers an alternative attitude to not condoning even what happened, but understanding it and hopefully from there moving on. So we have to start a discussion now, unfortunately, but the book, once again, called
Forgiveness and Other Acts of Love.
And the author
is Stephanie Darick.
Yeah. Great. Yeah, it's a wonderful book. She's a great writer and very accessible as well. And you can reach the show at bfmnightschool@gmail.com or look us up on Facebook. That's BFM Night School. Just type that in the search space. Jessica, you are on Facebook, correct?
I am on Facebook, yes.
We can look you up.
Yes.
Should anybody want to get in touch with you to talk about this stuff. In any case, that is all the time we have for today. Please forgive us if we said anything wrong. Once again, we are glad to have you listen and tune in. This is Ahmad Fuad Rahman. You're listening to Night School on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.